We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Russia's advance on Ukraine continues as another round of talks ends without a ceasefire. Meanwhile, the invasion is testing the partnership between Russia and China.
Many experts say they're trying to walk this impossible tightrope. On one hand, China still tries and needs to honor its partnership with Russia. And then they also want to adhere to their long-standing foreign policy principles around non-interference.
Plus, space junk is about to crash into the moon. Why environmentalists are concerned. It's Thursday, March 3rd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Russian and Ukrainian negotiators met for another round of talks in Belarus today, but failed to reach a deal to end the war. But the two sides have agreed to organize humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians and to deliver food and medication, with limited ceasefires for the evacuations. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 1 million people have fled Ukraine since the Russian invasion began a week ago. Meanwhile, Russian forces continue to attack major cities and are advancing in southern Ukraine. In a televised address, Russian President Vladimir Putin said the invasion is proceeding according to plan. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said today that the Biden administration has started an internal process to evaluate whether any of Russia's activities in its invasion of Ukraine should be considered war crimes.
I think we've seen on the ground that reports of a range of barbaric tactics, of reports of targeting civilians. That's all factors that we look at. And again, that interagency, that process that has been stood up, would provide any information to the ICC or any other international body taking a look at this.
For his part, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on residents of Russian-occupied areas such as Kherson to resist, saying that sooner or later the Russians would be forced to leave. President Biden is asking Congress to authorize $10 billion in immediate funding to aid Ukraine, increasing his administration's initial ask of $6.4 billion. According to a letter from the White House Office of Management and Budget, the funding will be used to pay for more defense equipment, emergency food assistance, U.S. troop deployments to neighboring countries, and sanctions enforcement. The Biden administration also moved to increase sanctions on Russia today, targeting 8 Russians with close ties to President Putin and imposing visa restrictions on 19 Russian oligarchs, as well as 47 of their family members and close associates. Meanwhile, French authorities have blocked a yacht linked to the sanctioned chief executive of oil producer Rosneft as part of what has been promised to be a global dragnet of assets belonging to Russian oligarchs. Wall Street Journal Paris reporter Nick Kostov says that, like the U.S., French authorities have also put a task force in place.
And this task force is basically trying to compile a list of the oligarchs that are currently in France, if there are any, but also of all of their assets, all of their properties, all of their boats, all of their yachts, all of their chalets in the Alps, whatever they can find that belongs to these oligarchs, and they're trying to put that on the list. The finance minister has already talked about this. He's already said that this is going to take some time. It's not easy because, you know, a lot of these assets are owned by shell companies, which are not directly in the name of the oligarch. But this is essentially how they're going about it. And French authorities have also reached out to banks. They've reached out to insurance companies to see if they can also help in compiling these lists, and so that's what they're doing right now.
A report from the UN Atomic Energy Agency has found that Iran has increased its stockpiles of enriched uranium and now has almost enough to make a nuclear weapon. The report comes as negotiators from the U.S., Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China are meeting with their Iranian counterparts in Vienna to try to restore the 2015 nuclear deal. That would remove international sanctions on Iran in exchange for greater but temporary restrictions on its nuclear program. Iran has expanded its program since the U.S. left the pact in 2018, but maintains it is for peaceful purposes. and members of the Sackler family, who own Purdue Pharma and grew wealthy from OxyContin sales, have agreed to give back $6 billion to settle lawsuits charging them with helping to fuel the opioid epidemic. The settlement comes after a previous proposal was rejected by a federal judge, who believed the family wasn't paying enough to earn immunity from civil opioid lawsuits. The Sackler family has denied wrongdoing in connection with its ownership of Purdue and has said it didn't anticipate the litigation that drove the company to bankruptcy. The deal is awaiting approval from the overseeing judge. Coming up, how the invasion of Ukraine is complicating Russia's relationship with China.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
In early February, around the start of the Winter Olympics in Beijing, China and Russia made a bold joint statement that their friendship has no limits. It was a clear articulation of the alliance between the two authoritarian countries and a rebuke to a common adversary, the U.S. But less than a month later, that pact is facing a huge test, perhaps its greatest. The UN has condemned the Russian invasion of Ukraine in no uncertain terms, and the West is punishing Russia, Putin, and his supporters, leaving him virtually isolated on the world stage. So what does that mean for the alliance between Russia and China? And where does it leave Beijing? Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal Chief China Correspondent Lingling Wei. Hi, Lingling. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. How had China been aligning itself with Russia, and why? Why has it been in China's interest to ally with Russia?
China and Russia have been moving closer together for a number of years. From China's perspective, the relationship really has got much closer under President Xi Jinping, who came to power in late 2012. From Xi's perspective, Putin and Russia is basically a partner that he can use to confront the U.S. So we have seen this relationship developing, evolving over the past 10 years, if not longer. And it really reached the highest point on February 4th when both leaders issued a joint statement. Basically, it was quite an extraordinary, more than 5,000 word long statement. They basically expressed a lot of common interest and their positions on a host of issues. That statement really caught the world's attention, especially President Xi's endorsement of Mr. Putin's position that is against the expansion of NATO in Europe. So that statement marked the highest, the closest point in this China-Russia relationship since the early years of the Cold War, 70 years ago.
The Olympics themselves posed another challenge for this relationship. Russia was already massing troops on the border with Ukraine, and several nations, including the U.S., had a diplomatic boycott of the Olympics, citing China's human rights record. How did Russia and China navigate their relationship during the Olympics?
President Putin basically was the only VIP guest outside of China. Xi Jinping was able to get to attend the opening of the Olympics. So for Xi, that was the big deal, right? Finally, someone, you know, was showing respect to him at the time when China was already a little bit isolated from the rest of the world over a host of issues from human rights and other coercive behavior China presented to some of its trading partners. So definitely that was considered quite a event for Xi. And before the opening ceremony, President Xi and President Putin held an hour-long conversation meeting. And soon afterward, the joint statement was issued. But I wanted to point it out that it was also a very short trip for Mr. Putin. He was in Beijing for less than a day. And, you know, after the very public and united front display at the summit that was broadcast by China state media, there were a few images of them together after.
It's been just about a week since Russia has invaded Ukraine. What kind of position geopolitically has this put China in, as just having recently very closely allied itself with Russia? What is the situation now for China?
China is in a very uncomfortable position right now. They are in what many experts say they're trying to walk this impossible tightrope. On one hand, China still tries and needs to honor its partnership with Russia. And then they also want to adhere to their long-standing foreign policy principles around non-interference. You know, that would require China to come out more forcefully condemn Russia's invasion, but they haven't done that. And then adding to the balancing act is China's desire not to basically have an outright hostile relations with the US and Europe. So as you can see, there, you know, at least three objectives here they're trying to achieve, but it's impossible really to achieve all three. Foreign policy experts have told us, and most they probably could achieve one or two of them, but not all three. So China right now is in a very uncomfortable position.
Lingling, what does China stand to lose if it cuts ties with Russia? And on the flip side, what would it stand to gain? What is the sort of calculus there for Beijing?
I don't think China will move to break with Russia. That is highly unlikely. It's actually in Beijing's interest to try to keep Russia around, because they don't see any good chances of having a better relationship with the US. Then having Russia around as an ally or partner can help basically pressure the US, counter what they see, both countries see, increased American threats. Siding with Russia now really has put China in a very complicated and difficult position. Many politicians from Washington to Brussels have already grouped China together with Russia as this kind of new axis, right? A term that could give Western alliances more reason to disengage from China and form closer ties among themselves. You know, many experts that we have talked to really think the cost for China way bigger than any kind of potential benefits or getting out of the relationship. One of them basically said it was a massive foreign policy miscalculation for China's leader.
That's Wall Street Journal Chief China Correspondent Lingling Wei. Lingling, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, there's been a massive increase in space missions in the past few years, and that's led to a new problem. There's a lot of junk up there. On Friday, shortly before 7:30 a.m. Eastern, a 4-ton piece of space debris will crash into the moon's surface. The object's believed to be a spent Chinese rocket booster, and the hit could create a 65-foot-wide crater. Now, lunar impacts are nothing new. Space agencies have left debris on the moon for more than 60 years. But according to the European Space Agency, tomorrow's event is the first unintentional hit to the lunar surface by human-made waste. Our science reporter, Eileen Woodward, says there are growing calls to protect space's ecosystem.
There's a growing movement among scientists and astronomers. It's called space environmentalism, and it's basically the idea that space should be afforded the same sort of protections as we give to terrestrial ecosystems on Earth. The idea of, like, maybe there should be regulations in place that dictate whether you need to be tracking debris in sort of these closer to the moon orbits, or whether you need to provide data about where your spacecraft are going once you've launched them, which would help identify them more easily.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.